This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have to understand that Africa is a growing market. Africa has some of the fastest growing economies in the globe. Africa is the youngest population.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City New York University, on why it is significant that the African Union joined the G20. Details coming up. Also, Gabon's military leader says ousted President Ali Bongo now has his freedom. And China has pledged to help South Africa with its crippling energy crisis. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The group of 20 comprising the world's richest and most powerful countries is granting membership to the African Union. A top government official from South Africa, which is a G20 member, said the language for the induction was still being discussed but could be firmed up by tomorrow. David Monda, professor of political science at City New York's University, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy what the membership would mean for the African Union.
I think it's an important occurrence in two regards, one philosophically, but the other diplomatically. And I think I speak philosophically in terms of its importance in the idea that you have this block of 55 African states with a combined population of 1.4 billion people coming into a forum with one voice at par with other major powers or emerging powers like India with a population of almost 1.4 billion and China with a population of 1.4 billion. So I think philosophically, it's this broader narrative of bringing another voice from the global south, you know, on board with these other huge population blocks from the global south in China and India. But on the diplomatic front, it's also very important because it then affords Africa to have a voice on another multilateral platform, in this case, the G20. Where African issues can be articulated, where Africa can actually have a voice and can speak specifically to its own issues. Because one of the grievances from the continent has been it's invited to a lot of international fora, but it's not necessarily a respected participant. It's almost like a token participation. So the more forums Africa is able to be involved in, I think the more it will have its voice, it will leverage its interest. So I think from a philosophical point of view of expanding the representation of the global south, but I think also from a diplomatic point of view in terms of getting the African voice onto another alternate platform, this is an important occurrence.
The G20 currently comprises 19 countries and the European Union, and the members represent around 85% of the global GDP, more than 75% of global trade, and about two-thirds of the world's population. How would the inclusion of the African Union impact the role of the G20 in the world?
I think that's a very important question. I think on two levels. Diplomatically, the African voice can have significant leverage within multilateral frameworks. So when we're thinking, for example, around the United Nations, there's a very direct correlation between what happens at the G20 and what happens at the General Assembly, its impact on the Security Council and global responses to international security, humanitarian, political and economic crisis. So I think that's a very important variant. But I think secondly, we have to understand that Africa is a growing market. Africa has some of the fastest growing economies in the globe. Africa is the youngest population per capita than any other region in the world. So when we're thinking also from a demographic perspective, I think it's very important to also be able to include the continent because Africa will be the engine for growth for the future. And in an interconnected world, you know, it's really a geographic space that cannot be marginalized anymore. So I think the impact will be massive, not only diplomatically, but also politically and economically.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City New York University, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. Gabon military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema says former President Ali Bongo, who was toppled in an August 30th coup, now has his freedom and, because of his health, can leave for medical care abroad. The junta has also created a transitional constitutional council. Moki Edwin Kinzeka in neighboring Cameroon spoke to analysts about what the latest developments could mean for a restoration of democratic rule in Gabon.
Le comité pour la transition et la restauration des institutions.
The voice of Colonel Orich Mafumbi Mafumbi, spokesperson of Gabon's Committee for the Transformation and Restoration of Institutions, declaring on Gabon National Television that, for health reasons, ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba is free from house arrest. Mafumbi says the deposed leader can seek medical treatment abroad if he wishes. Bongo in October 2018 suffered a stroke which left him physically impaired with difficulty moving his right leg and arm. He frequently visited foreign hospitals for treatment, according to Gabon's military junta. The military junta announced Bongo's freedom after Abdou Abari, head of the United Nations Regional Office for Central Africa, met the deposed leader in Libreville. Abari said Bongo is in good health and wants the preservation of peace and social cohesion in Gabon. Jean-Christophe Nang, a secondary school teacher in Bitam, a commercial town on Gabon's northern border with Cameroon, says military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema, a first cousin of Bongo, who led the ousted president's security team, should have prohibited Bongo from leaving Gabon.
La question de la transition est le sujet vraiment à beaucoup d'enjeux.
He says Gabon needs Ali Bongo to provide information on the large fortune his family and friends have amassed from the misuse of public funds and corruption in oil exploitation deals. Nguema should watch out because Bongo, whose family has ruled for close to 60 years, and his supporters may have plans to destabilize Gabon. General Nguema took over from Bongo, who came to power in 2009 following the death of his father, Omar, who had led the Central African country since 1967. Gabon's opposition says the family ruled with an iron fist and confiscated most of the oil-producing nation's wealth. Nang said countries should help Gabon recover ill-gotten wealth hidden by the Bongo family. The military junta also announced the creation of a transitional constitutional council and appointed Dieudonné Aba Awonu, a civilian magistrate, as president. Civilians were also appointed to govern the 9 regions that make up Gabon. The junta also appointed Brigadier General Raponchombo Jude Ibrahim to manage the Libreville City Council during a period of transition. Nguema says officials of the Transitional Constitutional Council will be officially installed in the days ahead. Gabon's dissolved Constitutional Council was created by Omar Bongo, Ali Bongo's father, in 1991. Marie-Madeleine Boransou, the country's top magistrate and the elder Bongo's one-time romantic partner, served as president of the Constitutional Council from its creation until it was dissolved by the military junta last week. She says she is ready to work with Gabon's new leadership and officials appointed by the military to construct a peaceful country.
Tout à fait normal, c'est dans l'ordre normal des choses.
She says she welcomes the creation of a constitutional council because Gabon has entered a new era and all of its institutions need to be rebuilt. She says she has talked with Nguema and is ready to hand over power to the president of the newly created transitional constitutional council. Despite the appointment of civilians and apparent popularity Nguema has so far, the United Nations, the African Union, the Economic Community of Central African States, and the Central African Economic and Monetary Community continue to call on Gabon's military junta to hand over power to civilian rule. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Military coups were a regular occurrence in some parts of Africa in the decades after independence. Togo, in West Africa, was the first to record a takeover on January 19, 1963. The overthrow of President Ali Bongo Ondimba in Gabon is just the latest in a string of 9 coups in the past 3 years and comes just a month after soldiers took control in the West African nation of Niger. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula has more on recent coups.
The Niger and the Gabon coups share a common link. They have popular support. Dr. Hassan Khanenje, a political scientist and the director of the Nairobi-based Horn International Institute for Strategic Studies, cites rare phenomena in the Niger and the Gabon coups.
These coups seem to have a lot of popular support, and so there is an emerging trend of authoritarian populism, especially in the absence of democracy. Historically, military rule coups have always been followed by either caution or celebration. The populations are already extremely frustrated with the status quo, with governments that either have been kleptocrats, or they've been family dynasties, or they've assumed power through means that were less than democratic.
Khanenje commented on the next likely targets.
You have Togo, that has been a family dynasty. You have Cameroon, in which President Biya has been in power for more than 4 decades. And of course, these family dynasties also happen to be very unpopular.
Hamani Manyora is a political and social commentator and a lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He says former French colonies now seem particularly prone to military takeovers.
African leaders do not want to give democracy a chance. In the case of Francophone countries, the French colonial power left former colonies not very far from slaves, bad governance, allowing the French to continue exploiting those so-called independent countries in a very bad way.
Khanenje notes some of the coups in the past few years have been in Sahel nations that have struggled to combat extremist militants, Chad, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso.
The current chaos, of course, tend to provide fertile ground for extremist groups. But also, there's a likelihood that if the military succeeds to bring some type of order, that's going to deny space for these extremist groups.
The African Union has suspended Niger and Gabon from its activities following the coups. Manyora tells us what African leaders and regional blocs such as the Economic Community of West Africa States should do.
They must strengthen the AU secretariat in Addis Ababa, especially the political wing. If AU were to go forcefully, if ECOWAS were to move in, there will be loss of life. Some foreigners could be celebrating it. Niger and those other supporting countries are prepared for war. AU can call them to meetings. AU can negotiate things with them, but not force.
Analyst Morris Odhiambo, vice chairman of Diplomacy Scholars Association of Kenya, links coups in Africa to a series of anti-government uprisings that spread across much of the Arab world more than a decade ago.
The coups have been catalyzed by the general instability, and all this goes back to the instability brought about by the Arab Spring. A lot of Islamist extremist activities have been domiciled in the Sahel and Maghreb areas.
The United Nations, European Union, Britain, and the United States have joined the AU in condemning the coups on the continent over the past few years. For VOA, I am James Shimanyula in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. China pledged to help South Africa with its crippling energy crisis during the recent BRICS summit in Johannesburg. At the same time, South Africa said it wants to correct a trade imbalance with China and export more finished products. But manufacturing in South Africa is hampered by the unreliable power grid. Kate Bartlett spoke to business owners in Johannesburg about the challenges they face.
These tools of the trade, a necessity to running a clothing business in the 21st century. The creative mind behind the South African shop is a man with big dreams.
We are gearing the business right now to be more international.
Shepo Malala may dream of his clothing designs going global, but he faces one challenge, almost daily power failures.
Something that has to take you a week can take you up to 4 weeks. You know, so that's the biggest challenge that we have right now.
While Malala has solar panels to help keep some of his machines running, they're not enough to run the bigger equipment. This business is not alone. South Africa recently signed deals with China, its biggest trade partner, to help with the energy crisis here. They include a grant and emergency equipment from China totaling some $30 million. Some experts see investments like these as an example of China's shift away from big infrastructure investments under its Belt and Road Initiative to more strategic investments under Beijing's green agenda. While South African President Cyril Ramaphosa thanked the Chinese leader for the grant, he also pointed to what he said was a significant trade deficit. Ramaphosa wants to see African countries move away from mainly exporting raw materials to more finished products. But experts say years of government mismanagement and corruption mean much of the infrastructure in South Africa, the continent's most industrialized country, is breaking down. Lumkili Mondi, a senior lecturer in economics at Witwatersrand University in Johannesburg, says correcting the trade imbalance is wishful thinking.
I doubt in the short to medium term that the trade imbalance between South Africa and China will change. Firstly, the destruction of South African industrial capacity. Secondly, destruction of infrastructure because South African ports aren't working efficiently. The rail infrastructure has collapsed, and we have talked about the electricity already. So therefore, it is a wish list.
South African Tony Esslinger, who runs Primal Spirits Distillery, also struggles breaking into the export market, with power outages being one of the main impediments.
The problem with it is that these machines run throughout the day, and can one run on the spirit run, for instance, is 8 hours. So if we have an interruption halfway through, then we have to reheat the equipment the next day. That's extra electricity.
Whether the new Chinese-funded electrical infrastructure can help businesses such as this distillery or this atelier expand overseas may depend on management within South Africa and China's willingness to import finished products from South Africa. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Presidential Election Petitions Court has affirmed the validity of Bola Tinubu's election as Nigeria's president in February, rejecting a series of challenges. Opposition groups, however, say they plan to appeal the ruling. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
In a hearing that ran more than 12 hours, the five-judge panel dismissed all the allegations brought by the Allied People's Party, Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party as lacking merit. The opposition parties had alleged the elections had been rigged and that Bola Tinubu, who leads the All Progressives Party, had been improperly declared the winner. Frank Tietje, a lawyer and political analyst, told VOA the judgment came as no surprise to many.
Many Nigerians, especially the supporters of the Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party, had hoped against hope that despite their constant declaration that they don't have confidence in the Nigerian judiciary, they were just thinking that something otherwise miraculous would have happened if the justices had taken a different decision.
Tietje said it would be unwise to appeal the decision to the Supreme Court after the way it played out at the tribunal.
The justices of the Court of Appeal delivered the judgment in such a manner that it would be very difficult to fault and very difficult to overturn. Therefore, it will be an additional misery for the supporters of PDP and Labour Party if they go on appeal to the Supreme Court, knowing full well that they don't have confidence in that court.
The chairman of Partners for Electoral Reform, Ezenwanwagwo, called on electoral stakeholders to take a lesson from the justices' deliberations.
I hope that the country has learned clearly that elections is not conducted on social media. Election is polling unit-centric, meaning that it is in the polling units, that's the theater of election, and it is at what happens at the polling unit that matters. The politicians will have to learn to have party agents and not rely on hearsay or reports of journalists or social media influencers.
The justices said the Labour Party and People's Democratic Party failed to prove that the election results were deliberately manipulated. There are fears the court's judgment may further polarize the nation. Political analyst Victorson Albenson thinks otherwise.
I don't think so. We are already where we are. Everybody is already set on the path that they are on. It will only mean that the leadership of the nation should work hard to ensure that Nigeria is better. If Nigeria is better, I think tempers will calm down, people will forget about the past and prepare for the next election.
The Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party have indicated they intend to appeal the ruling. In the meantime, President Tinubu has welcomed the court's decision and called for united efforts to build the nation. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
Opposition groups in Zimbabwe say there has been a crackdown on their members since last month's election, including the alleged abduction of two Harare city councillors. Reporter Kudzaza Nwashi in Harare has more.
Two opposition members who were elected to the Harare Council were reportedly abducted, tortured, and left for dead days after the August 23rd vote. Promise Mkwananzi is the spokesperson for the main opposition group, the Citizens Coalition for Change. He says the incident is not isolated and alleges supporters of the governing ZANU-PF party are behind the attacks.
Our opposition members are under threat across the country, continue to receive reports of vindiction, reports of intimidation and witch hunting across the country on our members.
He links the crackdown to last month's election and the declaration that Emmerson Mnangagwa had won a second term in office. International observers from the Southern African Development Community, the United States, European Union, the Commonwealth, and the United Nations said the election was highly flawed.
ZANU-PF did not win. That is the motivation of this crackdown. It's precisely because they did not win this election. And Mr. Mnangagwa's vindictiveness against the people of Zimbabwe for not voting for him. There is a lot of anxiety on the next steps of the opposition with regards to the stolen election. And Mnangagwa knows that he is not settled in that position. And any time from now, there will be processes that will lead to a fresh election in Zimbabwe.
Farai Marapira is the acting director of information for ZANU-PF.
As a ruling party, we have learned to take all accusations from the opposition with the pinch of salt that it deserves. Because if you're to look at it, they have so many accusations that abound and that are going around, but very little substance to them. So unless and until evidence is put before us, we are not going to be concerned with that.
Marapira says ZANU-PF is focused on their renewed mandate to run the country and deliver on their election promises. He urges the opposition to channel its efforts on fulfilling what they have promised to those who voted for them. Police officials in Zimbabwe have said they are investigating the reported abduction of the two Harare councillors. For VOA, this is Kudzaji Nawashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.